something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
All right, that's my 60s hippie music. What the fuck's going on? Joining me, Alex Hollings. First time in a few weeks. What's going on, man? Literally.
Hey, man, happy to be here. It's a crazy time, but I'm glad to be among reasonable people to have a normal conversation. I'm looking forward to it. It's always either people yelling at me on Twitter at this point or my daughter being mad I have the wrong dinosaur.
Wow. If you're fighting that one, you're encircled.
Oh, man. The social media sphere... I do genuinely believe that there are a lot of people with good intentions out there trying to talk about stuff.
But
I think for the most part, people are just looking for a digital punching bag, you know?
Are you providing that?
I try not to. I have a very strict rule where I am courteous up to three responses. So I try to give you the benefit of the doubt when you send me something crazy and assume maybe they didn't mean it in a crazy way. And I respond like an adult. And then if you respond again in a crazy way, I say, I'll give them one more shot to de-escalate. And if by your third strike you're out, then I just kind of disengage.
Oh, you don't go nuclear?
I really do believe that for a lot of people, for trolls specifically, for people who are just looking to get a rise out of stuff, you know, feeding the trolls is the best way to keep them around, you know? So when someone messages me with like a legitimate grief, a grievance about something I wrote, I'd actually really like engaging with those people.
Right.
Because otherwise, how would I know that I was off the mark without outside vantage points, you know? But when there's nothing constructive about it, when you're just being negative, even in a positive outlet or while we're discussing something positive, I give you three strikes and then disengage.
You know what? Wise beyond your years, my son. Wise beyond your years. No, let me just tell you, I think I'm down to two. It might be one and a half.
Honestly, so, well, you can at a certain point, you kind of can tell, right?
Well, yeah. So when it starts with you're an idiot, you don't do any research, which means you didn't read what they read, and it's disrespectful. You know, most of the time I don't even return the email. You know, because it's like when you wrestle with a pig, you're going to get dirty. Okay. So
that's
to me,
a good way to put it.
And then, but if it's something that's, you know, that's articulately written and dissents and whatnot, I'll say, hey, I appreciate the email. Here's what I read. Here's what I thought. You know, here's what I try to be consistent about. And then a lot of times the tone of the conversation completely changes to, oh, I got a, you know, articulate response, and wow, he was respectful, and okay, well, let me tell you what I was really thinking. And then when it's productive.
Yeah, I can tell you honestly that it gets me when I get like a well-put-together treatise on how I'm an asshole, you know? But when I have something, they're citing something that I wrote, they're saying they disagree. I do get a lot from that, even if you're a bit aggressive. But if all you are is aggressive, if you don't have any substance to back what you're trying to say, if you're just trying to be a jerk, not only am I not going to waste my time on you, but I'm not going to signal boost your bad behavior exactly. By responding to it, you know?
Which is, you know what? And that's exactly what they want is an amplification so then they can tell their friends. It's like
yes. It's
like looters that videotape themselves. Dig
yeah.
me. Dude, you might not want to do that because there's a thing called evidence that if you get busted, your own phone. But that's most of the time, you know, hey, I don't want to risk
giving bad gouge because I haven't read into this much, but there's a YouTuber named Jake Paul who has gained a reputation just for being kind of a dumb idiot. Over the years, he's done a lot of things that people have found offensive, but I think he did get himself arrested that way by filming himself looting. And worse still, I don't think it was where looting was actively going on. Like, how dumb do you have to be?
No, I mean, it's legendary. I mean, anyway, hey, I want I want to talk. I want to, before we talk general American issues. I want to. I mean, I want to. It's bled over into journalism. The Wall Street Journal, the New York Times opinion page editor resigned in the last 48 hours because of a piece they ran that was pretty surprising, written by a senator by the name of Tom Cotton. And it was surprising only that it wasn't the narrative, right? It
was
out of step with the New York Times normal liberal narrative, which was refreshing to see it published because you thought, oh, maybe some sort of discourse will occur. And within 72 hours, the guys resigned, and the publisher of the paper, the Sulzberger dude, he had been originally supportive, and then the tsunami of criticism, to include, you know, being told by staffers that you put our lives at risk, then, you know, caused him to change his tune. And now, what are the implications of journalism? That's the New York fucking Times. Is it that there can be no dissenting opinion? We can't go down that road. We have to stay on our own echo chamber. What are your thoughts on that, as somebody obviously in that profession?
I mean, to be totally honest, I see this as just another example of something like this happening, which I'm not. That's not a reason why it's okay. That's a reason why I'm more worried than ever. Now, I honestly didn't agree even with Tom Cotton's position on some of the things that he said. Right. I thought that he was reasonable with some things, but I am not into the idea of active duty troops and, you know, on U.S. streets. So I was like, hey, I should read this article, give it a fair shake, you know, and see what his position is and where I shake out after reading his. It's crazy to me that we aren't able to do that more collectively as a people.
Well,
that
and
we're
I would,
not able to
Alex,
say.
And I would say it ought to scare the shit out of us that we can't have an articulate, diverse discussion. And in the major publications of our time, that no longer, you know, is possible. And what is it? The tagline, journalism dies in darkness? Something like that? New York
Times? That's Washington Post, right?
Washington Post. Yeah. Right? Well, let me tell you what else dies in darkness. Right? Democracy dies in darkness. When it becomes simply a trumpet for whatever side's propaganda or however you now want to discuss it, when there's no reconciliation, when there's no debate, I mean, to me, you know, that's terrifying. And to me, what you just said, you read Cotton's article, then go read the Insurrection Act of 1807. Go read a summary of it, and you'll quickly find, right, that we weren't even remotely close to being anywhere near any of that shit. Okay? And as Alex said, you know, not only uncomfortable, but it doesn't apply. It was political grandstanding out of the White House. But,
I agree completely.
Right,
but this
but
is
that's,
the problem,
and that's
right?
The process, right? That should be the process of discourse, research, informed discussion. But shit, man.
No, I think that a lot of people on the left see everyone on the right as an opponent, as an enemy. And I think a lot of people on the right see a lot of people on the left as distinctly an opponent or an enemy. And the problem with that, it's not just that we end up with this fierce partisanship, which hurts us in countless ways, but it's also that within those spheres of ideology, nobody gets any red teaming. You know, red teaming, for anybody who may not be familiar with the term, is something that we used to say when I was in the Marine Corps, where we would talk about having someone put you through your paces and make sure that you're not screwed up. We're looking for issues, vulnerabilities, problems, and trying to improve. If you have a new operating system and you have red team, you have hackers red teaming it, it's they're trying to infiltrate it to look for weaknesses. Ideologically, politically nowadays, we don't see a great deal of red teaming because every initiative is born in an echo chamber, right? So by the time an initiative makes its way to the national stage, it's already circled in that echo chamber enough that the people who are supporting it, whether it's a left-leaning initiative or a right-leaning initiative, they have already had ample opportunity to justify their initiative in their head, not actually against any true criticism or any potentially real criticism, but instead narrative-wise. Like, they know that this tweet really resonated with people. They know that this meme did a really effective job of conveying the straw man argument that we're trying to put forward. Whereas if there were any level of communication between these two ideologies, by the time things got to the national level, it should already be fairly vetted, right? There should have already been arguments about this topic so that the topic could evolve, so that the initiative could shift, so that by the time it got ready to be voted on, it was a really good plan with very actionable steps. And instead, everything stays in a vacuum until it gets to the top of the echelon, whether that's an op-ed in the New York Times or it's legislation that's going in for a vote. It stayed within its echo chamber until that moment. And the problem that you have there is you end up with a narrative that resonates really deeply with the base and not with anyone else, right? And we've seen it politically. We're now, I think we have for a little while now, we're seeing it in the media sphere as well, where it's less important what the content is and more important how that content falls along pre-existing narratives that we've decided that we're comfortable with, right? And the danger in that, this is the reason why people say going to college is good, is because it forces you to be exposed to other vantage points. My wife and I have very different feelings about college. She didn't go. I kept going and going and going. I'll probably go some more. I love academia. But what she doesn't like about it is she says that they force you to learn stuff that doesn't matter. I don't need to spend a year reading about English folklore to be a good nurse. And I understand where she's coming from. But the value in that I see is being forced to look at things from a perspective other than your own. And college is pretty good about doing that. There's lots of people who would contend that it's much more liberal environment. In my experience, that was true, although I went to school in Boston, but I do think that there's value in being forced to look someone else in the eye and acknowledge that they're human, they're a real person, and their beliefs may not be built on ignorance, but rather on personal experiences. And that's what we're seeing in the media now, is if you're a left-leaning outlet, you cannot expose your readership to conservative thought without them finding it offensive. And to be frank, if you're a right-leaning outlet, you can't really expose your readers to liberal thought without it offending a bunch of people. And that makes the discourse in this nation even worse. The further we lean into these biases, the worse things get in the long run. I really think so.
So using that as a premise,
What do we do to fix it?
I'll leave that there. That doesn't bode well for solving this thing that's in front of the nation right now.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think that we've already seen on social media people sort of batten down the hatches. The internet right now is ripe with virtue signaling. To a certain extent, I can totally abide and understand and even appreciate virtue signaling. I think the internet
First of all, define two terms.
So when I say virtue signaling, who may not even necessarily believe something, but they feel as though it benefits them socially to say that they do.
Okay, virtue signaling. Explain what a troll is to everybody.
So a troll is somebody who literally – their intent is only negative. They're not trying to advance the conversation. They're not trying to improve anything. They want to get a rise out of people because they either think it's funny or they're that angry, or for whatever personal reasons they may have, all they want to do is create turmoil. They're not trying to help anything. And those two things combined make a dangerous cocktail for these types of situations. Because on the one hand, you have people who are really kind of fortifying their positions. Right. And then on the other hand, you have trolls who aren't helping to advance any good actor narrative. They're literally just further substantiating these people feeling as though they need to lock down their positions. When you're being attacked by dummies, You don't feel as though you need to respond in an articulate way. You don't feel as though you need to share your perspectives and what your experiences were that led you to this position. You just fortify your position and say, look at these yahoos. Look at these dummies on the other side. This, as far as I'm concerned now, is representative of their whole. And we all do it. I'm not saying that the left does it about the right and not vice versa. Everybody does this, right? We use social media to provide us with the straw man we need to make the argument we already liked seem the most justifiable and righteous, right? And the reason why that's especially dangerous in times like this is because I think, as we've seen, there are certainly things that need to be better, that need to change. I think that that's getting lost in the noise. You know, as this is just my own personal feeling, but the whole defund the police movement is a big part of that, I feel, is that's retaliatory and not really looking toward improving things. I 100% agree that we could do much better. We ask cops to do too much. But there's always going to be that guy who's just so broken inside that he's going to steal people's kids. There's always going to be active shooters. There's always going to be people who do not value other human lives. And we do need to have someone there that we can call to say, hey, I need help. Can you please come? It's the middle of the night and someone's breaking into my home.
But let me – and again, I'll kind of dovetail this off your – previous remarks. The success of Black Lives Matter, right, in terms of getting America to use their starting point as the premise for an ongoing discussion has been really amazing, Alex, in terms of the use of social media, right? When you go through the data, the data doesn't support what they say, and I've gone through it. I've gone through the Washington Post database, and I've actually looked up every one of those incidents in 2018 and 2019, and the narrative of the police shooting unarmed black men is not supported by the facts in the Washington Post database. Okay, and the FBI database, and again, unarmed black men, 17 in 2018, subtract one because that woman was actually killed by her grandson, who was a drug dealing felon that got into a shootout with police, and it was his bullet that killed his grandmother. So it's 16, 14 were justifiable, one was an accident, one was charged and found innocent, or found not guilty. I would tell you of the 14 that were justified, The vast majority of those start out with a random interaction and resisting arrest that escalates, sometimes with a vehicle, sometimes with hand-to-hand combat that escalates for a police officer. And when you go through and you footnote every one of them, you look at the officer and say, yeah, while technically unarmed, he tried to run over the officer with his cop, with his vehicle. While technically unarmed, he attacked the officer, got his taser, tried to get his pistol. And so, to me, what's amazing is Black Lives Matter has done, ought to be a case study in terms of taking something you're espousing, right, as an advocate and cherry-picking the truth while you're doing it, which a lot of people do, right, and then thrusting it into a national dialogue and have your point be the start point, which it is now. And from that start point with this videotape of this clearly heinous act, right? Clearly the guys, I mean, watching him kill Mr. Floyd is disgusting. The cold-blooded way in which he sits on him. And you're just going, shit, man. You know, that dude is obviously broke. But anyway, that video combined with that narrative provides the starting point, and then the next step down that road is defund the police. Now, it's really amazing, in my opinion, what they've been able to accomplish, right, with social media, you know, trumpeting their narrative. And I have to tell you, I mean, it got a whole nation in the streets in addition to, you know, a horrible act.
And I have to say, my concern about this is that So the Black Lives Matter movement and the Black Lives Matter organization, depending on who you are, you might see them as one and the same, or you might see them as different things. I'll be honest with you, up until recently, I was pretty ignorant to it. I've got a good friend. He was a Marine until he was a gunnery sergeant, and he ended up being medically retired and went on to join the CIA. He's one of those guys that like just exudes the respect that you feel for him. You cannot help but respect this guy. He's a black guy, and he and I were having a conversation about Black Lives Matter because I'd been agnostic to it. I have been like, I don't see the difference or the reason why we need to differentiate between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. And he told me, and I respect this position, where he was like, it's not that all lives don't matter. Of course they do. We're asking you for help with black lives right now. And I can respect that 100%.
Everybody does.
The Black Lives Matter organization, I do not feel as though very effectively represents people who are really concerned about what they saw with George Floyd. Maybe they're really concerned about systemic racism that they've seen outside of police uses of violence. Maybe they're just concerned about the way race is kind of dealt with in the country. But, you know, the director of Black Lives Matter did an AMA on Reddit and Ask Me Anything on Reddit yesterday. And I feel as though she did a really bad job. I think a lot of people agree with me.
Hold on. What's an AMA?
So an AMA is an Ask Me Anything. It's effectively, you know, Reddit is basically a forum. And so she went on and said, I'm going to spend a few hours here. Ask me any questions that you have about Black Lives Matter, about our movement, and I'll answer them to the best of my ability. And it's usually a great way to stir up support. You know, you see movie stars do AMAs to stir up support for a movie. You see, you know, celebrities do them to help improve their profile. In this case, you know, I felt as though the director of Black Lives Matter was saying, hey, I understand that you guys have questions about what we are and what we do. Let me engage with you directly. And I was like, wow, that's awesome.
Right.
I'm going to go skim through this. I'm going to read as much of it as I can and learn as much as I can. And she did not have a well thought out or put together answer for any of the questions that were posed to her. And it really frustrated a lot of people who supported her when they were saying, you know, that was a politician's answer and that it was eloquent, but you didn't answer any of the questions that we asked. And it frustrated people, both those who came in with a pre-existing bias against her organization, and those who genuinely came in supporting her and her organization were kind of mutually frustrated by this. And therein lies, I think, a big issue where the nation and honestly countries all around the world have mobilized in the past few weeks, right? And people were saying, we want to see things get better. We want to see things improve. And I can 100% respect that. I genuinely respect protesting. But I haven't seen any cohesive narrative about what we're supposed to do next. You know, I see the narrative that has kind of helped bring a lot of people together. And I think that that's great that a lot of people have been brought together. I think that it's important that we do address issues of race in this country. But it doesn't seem as though there's a plan to do that. And I think that what we're going to see, if that doesn't change soon, is we're going to see this fizzle out as the world kind of just moves on to the next calamity, you know, murder hornets or what have you, the next dentist who shoots a lion. And for people who really believe in this cause, for people who have experienced racism at one level or another, obviously don't want things to just go back to the way that they always were. But that's exactly what will happen if we don't have actionable, logical, reasonable steps that we can take to make anything different. If we don't know what it's supposed to look like after it's different, it's a lot harder to try to get there. So I think that we've seen a lot of success, to your point, of bringing people together behind a narrative. But I'm disappointed in the lack of planning or, you know, next steps that this narrative kind of brought with it. You would think that at this point, you know, Black Lives Matter has been around for years. Obviously, right. The civil rights movement has been around for even longer. Right. You would think that at this point we would have sort of a generally accepted upon list of things that we can do better. And instead we're getting, you know, disband the police. And I think that that's an unrealistic goal that's more retaliatory than it is anything else.
Hello.
I think.
Right? I mean, yeah. Come on. And we look, we all saw what happened in Baltimore after the Freddie Gray thing when the police said, okay, if you don't want us to be proactive and do these things, we won't. And the murder rate goes up. And what part of town does it go up in? Doesn't go up
the
in
lower income parts of town, which right. tend to be predominantly minority groups.
Right. And so
I agree completely.
It's just, I mean, those are facts, and I agree with you. So what's going to happen when we say, okay, we're going to sit down, and I had the commandant on yesterday talking about this, you know, in his, you know, dealing with Marines United, right? Okay, so we're going to get people in a room and we're going to start talking about this issue. Well, what happens when you get into a room, you have the police at one seat, you have police unions at another, you have community activists, you have Black Lives Matter, you have and politicians and the moderator, okay? Right. And then Black Lives Matter people, you know, roll out their assertions and the police roll out the data of the FBI and the Washington Post and said, it's not that way. You know, the shootings of unarmed black men are down 56% since 2015. Right. The relative percentage of blacks shot in those incidents used to be 40%. Now it's down to 22%. Those are real tangible steps measured by both the FBI and the Washington Post. So you're telling me that there's genocide going on, and I'm telling you that in the last 2 years, there's been less than 5 incidents in this country each year where police officers have been charged, right? Charged, period. And then everybody's been found, you know, innocent or not guilty. And so what happens, Alex, what happens when that mushroom cloud hits? And if it's on TV, you know, somebody's going to get up and walk out, right? And so to your you know, to kind of validate what you're saying, the next step is what, right? Systemic racism in education. Okay, show me and we'll fix it. Because education is led completely by liberals. Where is it? And so, but to me, when screaming, what I see a lot of is I crossed paths with a racist and I was treated like this, right? And this is real in my life and I want you to feel my pain, right? And so I know, but that's not systemic racism. So, you know what I'm saying? So when you start to footnote this so that you can move the ball forward and make it better, what you're describing in terms of lack of specificity is disturbing, because there are idiots out there. There are people in this country that are racist out there, right? And for those of us who aren't that way, that haven't raised our children that way, because for a lot of reasons, it's never been a part of our lives, whether you be a Christian or whatever, and you've lived your life like that, we want to help, right? We want to help, because just as we fought together, you know, under one color, you know, green or tan in Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, that's the way most of us have approached it for all of our lives. I mean, I grew up in the 60s. I can tell you, you know, when the N-word was used as a noun at a dinner table, right? And then you got the, you know how your grandfather is, don't say a word, right? You got that. And so to me, that's the part that you're describing that's so concerning about this is, where do we go? How do we make progress? And defunding the police, I mean, I hate to use the term dead on arrival, but I think most people don't look at that seriously. I mean, what the president...
I don't see how anybody could, you know? I mean, I think I've seen a lot of people say that we ask our police to do too much, and I totally believe that. You know, I've got a lot of friends who are cops, right? And it's a tough position to be in when your job is to respond to active shooters just as readily as your job is to respond to grandma fell off the toilet, right? And the scope of what we ask police officers to do in our community is huge, and we don't really train them or equip them to do that. And I think that we have seen instances of police officers on an individual level, at department level, maybe even higher. I think we have seen failures in leadership and in police officers. Obviously, the most egregious of them that comes to mind right now is the guy who knelt on George Floyd's neck, right? But the problem is that you don't solve a problem like this by getting rid of the systems we have in place, as even though I think that a lot of people are angry and they think that that's the best solution. It's the same question that I have every time we talk about gun control and someone says, well, we need to blank and blank and blank because the background check system isn't working. And the question I always have is, well, then why don't we invest in making the background check system work? If we have laws in place that should do these things properly and they're not doing these things properly, why aren't we looking at ways to fix them? Not everything means we have to, like, you know, brush our arm across the table and throw everything off and start over, as Minneapolis just voted recently to do. And again, you know, I genuinely wanted to be sold on an idea that I thought was foreign and alien to me. I said, I genuinely can't see any way in which defunding or doing away with the police force would help anything. Let me go and expose myself to dissenting opinions so that I can see where they're coming from. And, you know, when they were speaking to two members of the town council in Minneapolis or the city council, and they said, so you voted to disband the police. Who would then respond to an active shooter situation? And the two people they had on both said, well, the Minneapolis police.
I thought you disbanded them.
Exactly, right? So there's no – it doesn't seem – that seems to me to be very similar. It seems to me to be the legislative equivalent of us throwing the dentist who shot Cecil the Lion off Twitter, right? It doesn't actually do anything, but it just made people feel better. Right? Now, if you feel as though if you are, and I think that this is an important one to note, I haven't personally seen or experienced a great deal of racism in my life. And I think maybe in large part because I've been fortunate. I do have friends that are minorities who say that they haven't experienced a great deal of it either. But I've certainly got friends that are minorities that have said, yeah, I've definitely experienced racism and it's definitely an issue. I think that it's worth noting that not all of these metrics are quantitative, right? Some of them genuinely are qualitative, and that makes it really hard to measure, and it makes it even harder to fix. But we can't fix problems if we aren't willing to discuss them on a rational level as peers.
Well, and let me tell you, one of the things that I have a friend, and he's like a broken parrot, okay? That you want to smash with a baseball bat, right? And his one question consistently is this: what is the problem? And so in this instance, if you say the problem is what? Is the problem police officers shooting unarmed black men, killing black men, unarmed black men? Then I would refer you to this data, and what you're describing to me as a problem, in fact, is not a problem and is trending to the point, right, after you footnote everything, I mean, you have to extol the efforts of the police department. And he said, so the first thing I want you to do for me before you solve this problem is I want you to define the problem for me. And what you're describing is we can't even agree on what the problem is yet so that we can get after it.
I really think that that's the case. Like I'm interested to hear your take on this.
My friend is salivating right now.
So I think part of the reason why we can't nail down a problem, and I think that he's right that we need to, is that there are a lot of different things at play within this, right? Like one question I have for you, this is something that I've found very troubling. When all of this started, you know, my wife and I we adopted dissimilar positions on this. I know tons of cops. I know, obviously, mostly cops in the Boston and the New England area, so I don't know them all around the country. But I genuinely know good guys that are cops. I know black guys that are cops, that are good guys that are cops. And my immediate reaction, because my wife has a different social sphere than I do. So in my social sphere, I'm being inundated with images of protesters and rioters just doing awful things, right? And And in my wife's social sphere, she is just being inundated with images and videos of police officers doing egregious things, you know? And for the first few days there, we competed with my wife being like, yeah, but look at how awful this is. And me going, yeah, but look how awful this is.
What a nightmare.
And we were both missing the forest for the trees, right? I think that there's real value in understanding that on every in a football game, in a single play with 22 players on the field, there's a minimum of 11 individual interactions, right? That's in 1 7-second play. So if you were to videotape one of those individual interactions in 1 7-second play and use it as try to extrapolate that data to substantiate that player's entire career, it wouldn't be very accurate. If you use that one player in that one play to substantiate the entire team, it would be even less accurate. And if you did it to substantiate the entire population of football players, it would be even less accurate. So I'm not saying that there isn't an issue with the police, but I am saying that we're seeing lots of footage of police officers doing what I think is pretty shitty things, the wrong thing, bad things. We're seeing plenty of videos of protesters. I take that back. I think that there are protesters who are genuinely doing the right thing. We've seen looters and rioters who are leveraging a bad situation for their own gain or their own fun, doing that. And what we're doing is we're using those individual things, because if you're in a left-leaning sphere, you're being exposed to a great deal of police violence. And if you're in a right-leaning sphere, you're being exposed to a great deal of rioting and looting. And as a result, we're even less likely to be willing to come to the middle to discuss something, because increasingly we're seeing the other side as the enemy. It's important to remember that police officers are citizens of their community. There are people that live right here in this country, right next door to us. They're the guys and girls that we pick up our kids at daycare next to, that we have barbecues with. It's important to remember that there really are problems in this country in places where race is a real issue. And I think that not just necessarily with killing black people, but maybe with the way in which black people are generally policed, especially in urban environments, right? I think that there are qualitative issues that we're not that able to measure. There are real issues out there, but no one is willing to agree on what the issues are. And until we can do that, we really can't fix anything. And my best example of that is I have a lot of trouble seeing a lot of the stuff that I've seen police officers do in the past few weeks. Rounding up journalists is a big problem with me. Using a lot of violence against people who are otherwise being nonviolent is a big problem to me. And telling people that they shouldn't be massing for peaceful protest is, again, a big problem for me. I'm troubled by the fact that not only are we seeing it so much, but we're not seeing any real repercussions for it. I agree that we need to be engaging with race, but we also need to be engaging with the way prosecution works within the police department. When an Australian film crew who's trying to cover the protests in America gets the shit kicked out of them by a cop in a riot shield and a nightstick, we have to ask, okay, did something happen to that cop? Because you're not supposed to beat up journalists on TV. And so far, nothing seems to have happened to that cop, right? So what we're seeing is not only are the issues kind of being moved to the side so that we can talk about rioting and so that we can talk about the cops beating up journalists or the cops beating up little old ladies, we are no longer talking about whatever it was we were supposed to in the first place. And that's the danger in seeing each other as the enemy, is that we get so interested in winning that we stop to worry about whether or not everybody on our side is on the same page that we are, right? It's not just in this case. We see it in politics all the time. People defend their idiots, right? I'm not going to allow these Trump supporters to pick on my friend even though she said something stupid. I'm not going to allow, what was the name of that comedian who appeared on a magazine cover holding a severed Trump head? And then, in liberal news outlets, she went on an apology tour about how she's the victim in all this. And a lot of left-leaning people agreed with her that she's the victim in all this. That's the problem. The problem isn't just that there are issues we need to address, but it's that we're so eager to hate the other side that we are all too accepting of flaws and failures from within our own side. And I think that's true in both categories here. But until we can really nail down, okay, well, we think that A, community policing needs to have more emphasis on mental health. It needs to have more emphasis on social programs that can help low-income families.
I can hear my friend. I can hear my friends screaming. What problem are you solving?
Well, I think that there is a lot of truth in the fact that a lot of urban and a lot of lower-income urban communities have a much higher crime rate than higher-income communities.
Right, that's just a fact. Let me. I'll just bomb you with some from FBI data figures. Right, 54% of the chargeable homicides are charged to Black Americans. They're 13% of the population. 52% of the armed robberies are charged to, you know, Black men. And again, most of it happening in the inner city. And so these are the facts that the police officers deal with, right?
Well, let me ask you as well. I know for a fact that in the United States overall, the average for homicide solvency, the homicide solvency rate is floating around 50%.
What solvency?
Conviction? Catching the culprit and having them be convicted. It's somewhere around half. Right. If you were to kill somebody in the street today, depending on the circumstances and your environment, you can flip a coin, and that's how likely you are to get away with it.
Okay, I'm just giving you FBI data to in terms of this is the environment that the police go in to, and again, on the backdrop of what problem are we solving? Because here's one of my things. I believe a part of this and what you see in that videotape, that dude's dead inside. The dude that's sitting on Mr. Floyd's neck.
I agree.
That dude, you know, my daughter, who's 26, she sees racism. I said, I don't. I see hate. I see fucking hate on top of hate on top of hate. And he didn't give a shit who that is. Right. And
I think you may be right. But I also think that the fact that, you know, Floyd was a Black guy may have been a part of it.
Could have been. But I'm just saying, what do you see? Right. What do you see now? Can you do that job? You know, you just said, you know, cops, can you do that job for 19 years and not be that
without break
and not be that guy?
That's a great question.
I don't think you can. And here's what I believe. I believe that, you know, like the military, it's either up or out. Right. And so if you can't become a sergeant, a shift supervisor, you know, and get off the street in 8 years, we have a GI Bill for you. You can go to college or there's a living stipend that goes with it. And you're going to go to a different career because
I think that's honestly that's an actionable
right.
idea
that
you know?
Solves if an element of this is mental health. And I do believe based on my experience in coming and going to Iraq and Afghanistan, you can only do that stuff for so long before you become that guy. And if you look at the incident rate for divorce, 70-80% in urban centers for cops, alcoholism and suicide, their life expectancy is 10 years less than others. And so to me, you know, that's got to be part of a conversation that talks about how do we make this better? How do we take that number down to zero? And what do we have to do relative to this thing? And so what problem am I solving? I'm solving the quality of life problem for police officers that I believe trickles into their job performance. And it may be simply the way they treat people. It may manifest itself like it did in Minneapolis.
I think that's an awesome idea. I heard another idea floated by I'm blanking on her name. I think it's last name's Jorgensen, the libertarian candidate for president, where she was saying that she would like to see cops have to carry liability insurance, individual liability insurance, which would effectively make it so that if you were the type of cop who was going to use violence egregiously, you'd end up priced out of the job. You couldn't afford to keep working after you had to file so many effectively lawsuit claims. I forgot which major metropolitan area it was, but last year one of them paid $1 billion out in lawsuit settlements. When you think of that, when you think of a law enforcement apparatus in one community that has to pay out $1 billion in settlements, you can either look at that and say, okay, so the cops are bad, or you can look at that and say the cops are clearly ill-equipped, right? And those are two very different vantage points.
Or you could say this job is so demands of this job are so all encompassing that we don't believe you can do it for very long in this patrolman capacity.
People say we need to have cops patrolling their own communities. We can't.
Oh man.
Think about how unsafe your family would be as the family of a police officer if you were policing the community that your family lived in. If you had to arrest somebody because they did something bad, the potential for blowback on your family is exponentially higher if the guy you arrested knows where they live, right?
Right.
Like, it's not a reason. But the problem is that I think that, again, I personally do genuinely believe that there are issues with race in this country.
I don't think anybody who's been around, if somebody says they don't, right,
they're either naive or they're intentionally not looking.
So to me, the question is systemic, okay? Show me systemic racism and let's fix that. Because most of these, for instance, you know, I heard this the other Sunday night. I was driving, and I heard this. All these cities that have the worst records are all controlled by liberals. They're controlled by Democrats. They're in Democratic states, right? So it's not like this is a Trumpy event. These cities, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, are in Democratic cities run by Democratic mayors. The police contribute most, it's like 70-30, to Democratic candidates. Amy Klobuchar is named by name as one of the big recipients of support from the law enforcement community.
It's because you brought her up. Did you know that she did not prosecute?
Right. And so now as we look at this, and you're looking for the problem to solve and you're trying to have a frank conversation – the people that are in charge of these systems are liberals. And so show me the systemic racism, show me what they've done for it, you know, and let's get to the truth and let's try to solve this. You know,
you just touched on one of the biggest issues is a lot of people tend to think that the police, you know, they solve crimes. And to a large extent, that is a big part of their job. But really, it's the prosecution's job to solve crimes. The police are there to equip the prosecution to solve crimes, right?
Right.
So prosecutors and police officers have to work very closely together. And as a result, what you end up with is when complaints are filed against a police officer, a lot of times the prosecutors will defer to grand jury or they will choose not to prosecute at all because in a very real way, they're being asked to go after their own team, right? Now, I honestly don't have a model in mind that can solve this, but we do need to be cognizant of the fact that what we're effectively doing, the level of oversight that we're creating there, is we are asking a community's portion of the Justice Department, the police combined with prosecution, to self-govern. We're asking them to maintain overwatch on themselves, right? And that is a dangerous situation. And because of that, you know, you saw in Buffalo when that old man got pushed over by those two cops. I honestly don't think those cops necessarily really meant to hurt that guy. You know, the National Guard who was there present, they responded and helped the guy out. But when you see stuff like that, and then all the other – so those two cops were fired, and then all the other cops resigned. And the narrative in the media was that they were resigning in protest over those cops losing their job. Yesterday it was revealed that they resigned because they were told that they were no longer going to have liability coverage of that unit because of that. Their insurance wasn't going to cover them anymore. So they said, if we don't have that, why would we do it? Right. So they resigned from that force, not in solidarity, you know, with those two guys that pushed over an old man, but they were saying, legally speaking, we no longer have the legal or financial backing to perform this duty, so we're not going to do it. You know, that's an issue in our community. When these guys, they had no riot training, they didn't have the right gear, something bad happened, those guys got fired, justifiably perhaps, and then the rest of the group resigned their positions, not because even that they were saying, yeah, we should be able to push people over, but they were saying, you're asking us to do a dangerous job that has a great deal of risk involved and a great deal of liability involved. And if you're not going to provide me protection from either of those, why on earth would I put my neck on the line for this community? We need to remember that these guys are parts of our community.
Oh,
these guys
my God, girls. Alex, you are preaching to a deaf choir when you're saying that. Now, you've got to go, so I hate to cut the discussion off because I enjoy it, but I have one other thing I want you to speak to. Pretty astounding week for civil-military relations. As people that heretofore have said, yeah, I shouldn't comment on that. Yeah, it's inappropriate for, you know, retired flag officers and general officers of the four-star level to appropriate on that, as they all clicked off safe and let it rip. Give me your thoughts on all of that. It was an amazing week to watch relative to civil-military relationships.
It really was. And I'm a little on the fence. I read James Mattis's statement. I have, obviously, we've talked about it before. I have a great deal of respect and admiration for James Mattis. I even right now, don't love the idea of politicizing military figures. I will say, however, that in this climate, it has become almost impossible not to be a political entity as a military leader. And I think that that's a failure of our governmental apparatus. I think that we keep pointing at them and demanding that they be political. And then when they are political and it's not the way that people like it, they vilify them for it. And if they are political and it's the way people do like it, we herald them as heroes, almost as though your service is just kind of set dressing that we can use to substantiate our love for you as long as you are touting the narrative we prefer.
You're in our echo chamber, you know, much like the New York Times. As long as you're in our echo chamber, we're good with you. But let me tell you, I think you and I have both seen, right, articles circulating around the internet, right? Recall, you know, General Mattis back to active duty and NJ court martial or NJP his ass, right, for disrespect because.
Right? But come on, you know?
No. Honestly, you saw that, right?
Yeah. You know, and this is the real issue I have with that, especially, is that the folks that are like that are often the most outspoken politically people you'll find on social media, despite the fact that, you know, they're wearing their veteran cap at the grocery store. They think that they should be allowed to speak, but that others shouldn't. Right.
I would disagree with you. They think you should be allowed to speak, too. Until you take an opposing position,
yes,
then
exactly.
You're not allowed to speak.
I would really like to see us all collectively moving away from the idea that we want to look to our military leaders for political guidance. I don't like putting our military leaders in that position. I think that our leaders need to be able to serve agnostic to the party in power. I think they need to be able to serve agnostic to the man or woman in the White House. We should not have to have a full staff turnover every 4 to 8 years. I think that that hurts us on a defensive footing. I think it hurts us in a lot of strategic ways because there tends to be very little consistency in the long term. We've seen it with the space program. Why can't we get back to the moon? Well, it's because every 4 to 8 years, a new guy shows up and gives them a completely different goal. Changes the budget around, tells them to stop working on this rocket, start working on this one. And as a result, we have lots of barely finished programs that can't quite cross the finish line. I think that our military leaders need to be apolitical. I think, however, that when they are forced into a political position, I think it's worth giving them a read. I think it's worth acknowledging their experiences and their expertise. But obviously, just because somebody that you like and admire or somebody that you hate says something doesn't mean you need to like or hate what they said. Try your best to be objective. You can read what James Mattis wrote and disagree with it. You should never just adopt it.
You are so out of step with your peer group and with the world. We're going to find you. We're going to wake up and find you in a museum one of these days. This is what it used to be like when Grandpa was alive. But you're not even
honestly,
a grandpa
Dad.
Yet. Because the narrative, right, you know, not the narrative, the way it is right now is it's not even ready, aim, fire, right? I mean, that is, that's what you're describing, right? It's fire, aim, ready, right?
Yeah.
It's not even aim, fire now. It's just fire. And then fuck it. We'll sort it out later. But you're not going to out-scream me. So I feel bad. Yeah. I feel bad for you that you're so out of step.
I don't, because I firmly believe, I'm confident in the idea that before I die, we are either going to see America shift more towards pragmatism or shift further down toward, you know, slowly but surely ceding our position as the lone global power in the world, the lone superpower. My wife yelled at me the other day when we were talking about this whole with protests and civil unrest.
First of all, how is she ever – is it your animal magnetism? You and that, I have no idea. You and that beard and the picture of the guns?
Anchor, I got her pregnant. So
You go. I knew there's the
hook. You know, but she said you can't reason your way out of everything. Thing, right? Because she gets really mad at my insistence on trying to look at things from all vantage points. And I told her, no, we need to reason our way out of everything, because that's what we've forgotten how to do. I'm hopeful that more people think or feel that way. The best I can do is just keep asking people to be reasonable, and maybe either eventually they're going to wall up the door to my house so that I can't get out, or they'll start to listen.
My own opinion is that it will be the former, not the latter. You will be walled off.
Right.
Your daughter will be sent in to feed you. And, you know, your wife will say, how's daddy doing?
You know, as long as they put a PlayStation in there, I could really use the time off.
he seems to be happy, mommy. Okay. Tell him I said hi. Okay. All right, mom. Oh, my God. The whole Sybil. I said this when Alan spoke at the DNC. You know, if you want to take off your cloak of anonymity, I'm okay with that. You're a citizen, and you feel that strongly about it. Just get ready, though, because once you take it off, you can't put it back on. You cannot then become General Mattis again. You're Jim Mattis now. You wade into the political fray, and you're going to take it. And let me tell you, he has. I mean, some of the stuff that's been written to him about him by Marines.
Yeah, right. Which is disheartening to me, because I wrote about this on Facebook. I said, if you only value service among those who share your political beliefs, then you don't actually respect service at all. You don't have to agree with someone to say that they're a good man, or that they have a right to say something, or to even go, huh, that's an interesting position. You don't have to agree with people, guys. I don't know how many more ways that people can say this on the internet, but it's okay to expose yourself to dissenting opinions. If your values, if your beliefs are so weak that you cannot expose yourself to a contrasting opinion, then I would suggest that you reevaluate your values and your beliefs. You ought to be able to read someone else's perspective without feeling attacked. You ought to be able to. And until we can be able to, I think discourse on this nation isn't going to get any better.
So out of step. So out of step. I think General Mattis would have been better advised to write a letter to Secretary Esper for publication, imploring him, you're being pushed in a direction that clearly does not meet the standard of the Insurrection Act of 1807. And he should have gone click, 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 right? And knowing that Esper's a B-team guy and more susceptible to being pushed by the flamethrower-in-chief, right? And then, you know, exhorting him to stay true to the Constitution, to stay true to the nation's history, and not jam a federal military response for political reasons down the throats of state governors, right? Employing you. But, you know, when he goes Nazi and you can hear the vitriol, I mean, and he's commenting on the president – I mean, clicked off safe. Like, who the Mattis is a Democrat, and now you're. And so, to me, if there's a way to do it, in my opinion, if you stick to the issue. But when you make it personal, it's like you're asking for it.
I think that there's a lot of truth there. I also think that James Mattis, I think from his personal interactions with Donald Trump, does not like Donald Trump. And, you know, so I think that to a certain extent, he was like, all right, they finally pushed me to the line. And now I'm going to tell people what I think because I've been thinking it since I resigned, you know?
That pretty much comes through the letter, I would say. Right?
I think so. You know?
I mean, but, and let me tell you,
I know you're not saying this, but I really would ask people as my parting shot, just because someone doesn't like Donald Trump or doesn't agree with Donald Trump, it doesn't even mean that they're not a Republican anymore. I don't know if James Mattis would have identified as a Republican, but like you are, I've been a Buffalo Bills fan my entire life. Every year I bitch and moan about the bad decisions that Buffalo is making. Every year I complain about the coaching staff in Buffalo. Every year I complain about the players that they traded over the offseason. I have never once, I think, in my life since the early to mid-90s, supported all of the decisions that the Buffalo Bills as an organization have made. But I'm still a Bills fan. You don't have to support everything that comes out of a politician's mouth just because you voted for them. And the same way you don't have to oppose everything that comes out of a politician's mouth just because you didn't vote for them.
Well, here from conservatives, right, here's what they say. Who else was I going to vote for? Hillary Clinton?
Is she
any different than Donald Trump? It simply is different set of issues and a different set of
tales. Yeah, it would have been choosing one bad situation
and now,
over another one.
Joe Biden over Donald Trump? Right.
That.
Look, I know I make compromises in my life, but at least he's a conservative fool, not a more liberal fool. And I guess I have to live with that. You know, what do I do? I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. There's no way I'm going to do that. Am I proud?
I'm concerned about this upcoming
election. Will I hang a banner on the front of my house saying I proudly voted for Donald Trump? Probably not. But I don't have a choice in this. At least he's conservative.
You know, for me, you know, I'm a guy who hasn't had the opportunity to vote in a ton of presidential elections yet. I'm 35.
You're not that young. It's you voted in enough, old man.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I cannot tell you the last time that I went and voted in a presidential election where I was so sure of my pick that I would have hung a banner outside my house, like you're saying. You know what I mean? That concerns me about the state of American politics. We saw the memes all over the place in 2016. We're already starting to see them again where we go, out of a country of 330 million, the best we could do is two 80-year-old guys.
White guys. You
know, right? And two guys that I would contend you could not put across a conference room table and ask the two of them to carry out a coherent conversation.
Oh, my God. And one of them painted orange, and the other one is so shot up with Botox, right? His face doesn't move when he talks.
How is it that we as a people, the most powerful nation on the planet, with an incredible educational apparatus, with incredible opportunities, how is it that the best we can do are two blithering old guys?
Lame dudes. And let me tell you how. It's campaign finance. And until you reform that system, what this system operates and rewards is name recognition and the ability to raise money.
I agree completely. And I think Joe Biden won the primary not based on anybody actually watching his performance this year.
Oh my God.
But based largely on remembering his performance in previous elections.
Right, and people that would not vote for Bernie Sanders. And I mean, Joe Biden was dead man walking, and then all of a sudden Amy Klobuchar folds. Who else? Who was the other guy that folded? Mayor Pete.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I loved him, but I felt as though he was trying really hard to be reasonable.
Right.
You know.
But hey, he couldn't get through the. You know.
Honestly, he wouldn't have been a great candidate to run against Donald Trump anyway, because he would think of easy it would be to twist. This guy was a mayor. You know what I mean?
Right.
It would be a very difficult.
And so Joe Biden gets off the campus and now he's the guy. And you watch him, you know, and honestly, my own opinion, COVID-19 thing has been good for Joe Biden because it kept him in the basement because he is, you know, the one man gaffe machine. So
his base is less forgiving of gaffes than Trump's base, you know, and that's something to be considerate of. Trump is obviously appealing to his base hard right now because it's an election year and he knows that his base are who elected him. It'll be interesting to see if Joe Biden mirrors that and appeals specifically to his base, or if he tries to appeal to a broader demographic of Americans.
Well, it's that middle piece, though, right? The country splits 40-40, and it's that 20%, probably less than that, in the middle. And the way – I mean, they elected the elder Bush. They elected Bill Clinton twice. They elected the younger Bush twice. They elected Barack Obama twice. So that 20%, right, is that 20% – and I believe Donald Trump hurt himself substantially last week with the whole, you know, dun da da dun, you know, send in 10,000 troops, and that's just trickling out now, and holding up the Bible in front of St. John's. To me, he showed people a side of him that he had been kept, right, more of on the down low, but using every instance to trumpet himself as this powerful president, you know, to include stuff like, but again, this stuff wasn't as visible and wasn't, in my opinion, as significant. And that is stuff like, I have the power to open up every state. You really don't.
Yeah.
But on to the next person that did something stupid on the internet, and we'll look at that shiny object, right? This, I think, is substantially disturbing even to conservatives. Like, he did what? Right? And so to me, we'll see if he can come, if the economy comes back and Joe Biden, you know, gives it, you know, the gift that keeps giving. If he does similar stupid stuff, will people ultimately say Trump's better with the economy, he's harder on defense, I'll accept that, you know, I'll vote for him? Or will they say, you know what, he's, you know, him and his orange face paint, it's got to go. So, any before a final thought before you leave? I know you got to go.
Honestly, I guess the final thought that I have is I would plead with anyone who's listening to try to choose your beliefs and your politics a la carte. You know, it makes all of this less stressful. I genuinely, my approach to national politics is a lot less stressful in my old age now than it was when I was younger, and I felt as though I belonged to a party. I'm not saying you don't need to belong to a party, but I really would urge people, when it comes to these individual issues that are affecting our lives or that are potentially affecting our lives, I really can't ask you enough to choose your beliefs on those, not based on the party line, but based on how you really feel, because ultimately – we've kind of been shoehorned into this position where we need to form our beliefs around the narrative of the candidate that we want to vote for. And that's not the way a republic is supposed to work. It's not supposed to be two competing ideologies, and whichever one wins is the way of the nation for the next 4 years. It's supposed to be that we work together to find the best possible solution. We've come a long way from there. But step one to being able to work together to actually move things forward is going, oh yeah, you know, I want to vote for this guy, but, you know, I really think that guy was right about this. So when I vote this guy into office, I'm still going to say we need to work on this, even though it's not a part of his platform. You do not need to meld yourself to a politician's platform. Politicians need to start melding their platforms to their constituents.
Whoa.
We can't do it until we start demanding that they do.
I want to wish you good luck in your discussions with your wife.
Thank you.
All right.
We could use it.
And tell everybody where they find your work and real quick, what are you writing about?
Well, you can find my stuff. You can find me on social media at facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. You can find me on Twitter at AlexHollings52. And you can find my work every day at sandboxnews.com. That's Sandbox with two X's. We are a military-specific news organization, and despite all the politics that I tend to ramble about, we keep politics entirely out of Sandbox News content. It's all content that pertains to the military and defense apparatus. We do discuss foreign policy, but for the most part, when it comes to domestic politics, all we do is signal boost the messages from our Defense Department leaders, and we don't jump into that fray at all. So you don't have to feel as though you need to ascribe to one party or the other to check us out. We've got lots of great content. a lot of the stuff right now, we're moving back away from talking about the military's vantage point on civil unrest just because we want to make sure we remind people that there are wolves at the door, so to speak, that we need to keep our eye on. And we want to make sure that we focus on not just the issues here at home, but also our position internationally and abroad from a defensive standpoint. So please check us out at sandboxnews.com with two X's. And I'm there every day. So feel free to shoot me a message on social or through the message form on Sandbox. And let me know if you want to see something.
Mr. Sandbox himself, Alex Hollings. All right, bro. Thanks for the discussion. Always enjoy it. And we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
Likewise, man. Talk to you soon.
There you have it. Alex Hollings here on a Tuesday morning. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.